with the first pick in the 2017 NFL Draft.
This is the Best Player Available podcast.
The Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky. The Kansas City Chiefs select Patrick Mahomes. The Houston Texans select Deshaun Watson.
It's time to go inside the league's look at the 2017 NFL Draft with the people who made the picks. Here's your host, Neil Stratton.
Welcome to the Best Player Available podcast. My name is Neil Stratton, and I'm the founder of Inside the League. It's my great honor to welcome Saints assistant GM Jeff Ireland for episode 9. Not only is Jeff the former GM of the Miami Dolphins and the author of the foreword of my book, Scout Speak, but almost from the moment Jeff arrived in New Orleans, the Saints have been among the best drafting teams in the NFL. Among the players the Saints have selected on Jeff's watch are Michael Thomas, Von Bell, David Onyemata, Eric McCoy, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And UDFAs like Deontay Harris have come in after the draft. But today we'll be discussing the draftees that won Jeff and the Saints, the first ever Best Draft Award as voted on by NFL scouts and executives in 2017, which Jeff accepted in February 2018 at the NFL Combine. Jeff, I'm so glad to have you, buddy.
Glad to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Jeff, almost from the moment you arrived in New Orleans, the Saints drafts spiked upwards. What was the central change you instituted that you feel made the biggest difference?
Neil, I think more than anything, it was really more just a new voice stressing things a different way. I would say that Sean and I were influenced the same way, you know, growing up with Bill Parcells and really just kind of having me come in on the same things that Sean was trying to instill with his staff. Just being on the same page with things that we both wanted. That's just, me influencing and emphasizing certain things that were important to Sean and myself and creating a strong conviction, for what we're trying to get done. That started with, how we trimmed the board down to a very manageable number, emphasizing the makeup of the player. Stop worrying about where a player is getting drafted versus, the vision for the player. What's the vision for us, the fit? So, this is by no way does it mean that they weren't doing really this before I got here, because they were for the most part. I think just the influence and the emphasis on certain things, creating an atmosphere that's a little bit more collaborative with our coaches than maybe in the past, and just really kind of focusing on what the right decision was for this program.
Okay. Now, without going into a lot of detail on how y'all do grades, et cetera, did you have to change the grading scale from what they had been using prior to your arrival there?
Actually, I didn't change. I kind of bought into their scale. I made a few tweaks on how to kind of get players off the board, but yet retain a value, for the player. Just a couple of tweaks. Their grade scale and my grade scale, what I use in Miami, was very, very similar. So it was easy for me to adapt to that and then make a couple of tweaks that made sense for everybody involved.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so Jeff, you got there in 2015. You had, as we both know, an extraordinary quarterback there. When you have an elite quarterback like that, you have a window. Maybe it puts pressure on you. On the other hand, maybe it relieves you of certain things. How did having Drew Brees on board affect how you drafted and your philosophy, positively and negatively?
Well, I think having someone like Drew emphasized our desire to protect him more than anything else. I mean, supporting him and keeping him upright was a very big focus for us. Our process doesn't really change. It didn't change this year, not having Drew in there. I think having a consistent process of evaluating, every position, but especially quarterbacks, is important. So you can kind of compare and contrast past drafts, you know, the success of quarterbacks, and just having a consistent approach. So therefore you're not, you know, elevating a need for a quarterback when you do need one, that's a consistent process. And so I think that goes for quarterback and every other position, is that you have a consistent process and you attack every position to where, you know, as if that's a need position, and quarterback's no different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I gotcha. All right. Let's dig into the players in 2017 a little bit. Jeff, one of the team's best picks in 2017 came at the end of the first round in Wisconsin offensive tackle Ryan Ramczyk, though at the time the team already had an established right tackle in Zach Strief. You've also told the story in my book, Scout Speak, of having a serious interest in Texas Tech quarterback Patrick Mahomes. How do you weigh taking the best player available versus having an established player on the roster already there? And is that even a consideration when you see a player that you like?
Well, it's kind of the same answer to the previous question, really, is that, you know, you have a consistent process of evaluating players. And, hey, look, we're in the business of, you know, selecting players that can help us win. And whether that's this year or next year, you're just in the business of putting good players on your roster. And, you know, Ramczyk was obviously, he played left tackle. He played at a high level. That one season he was there at Wisconsin. He's a core position, a position in my mind that's hard to find. You can't have too many of those. So you put the grade up on the board, or the player and his tag up on the board with a high grade. And then, you know, I think after that board is set, you have a little bit deeper conversation, maybe higher level thinkers, in terms of, you know, when you have an established veteran on your team, his contract situation, his age comes to consideration. But just having a real clear vision for how that player gets utilized on your team. Does he win the job over an established veteran? Can you trade that, maybe that player? That wasn't the case with Zach, but there's a lot of things involved with, there's the process of evaluating the talent, and then there's the process of picking the player. And that's probably a separate conversation when it comes to upper level conversations once the board is set. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but
I think it's an important distinction, the evaluation versus the process of selecting them. And that's something I think a lot of people don't recognize and maybe don't even pick up on. It's such a complicated process from start to finish. Now, right. One thing that I think has been a very popular topic of conversation this year has been the lack or the limited medical information that's been gathered just because of the lack of combine, et cetera, et cetera. When Ramczyk was coming through, he had had hip surgery. How much of that was a concern for y'all? Had you checked everything out, or was there an element of risk there going in, not knowing exactly how that was going to heal?
Yeah, we had pretty good information. If I remember correctly, we knew he may not be ready for like the off-season program. He'd be on the back end of his, you know, rehab process. So you're inheriting somewhat of a player that was not ready to go, but would be ready to go once we got to training camp. And we felt like the talent was there. The makeup was there. And we just thought it was too much. And we felt good about the medical. So once he was fine, he was a clean player. Once this was something that could be fixed, it was an issue that he had, and they took care of the issue. And he was going to be able to be the player that we saw on tape. And that's important. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a postseason injury, you got to ask yourself, can that player that you evaluated maybe the season before, can he return to that same player? And if so, well, then you pick him. And if you can't, then it's a kind of a crapshoot on whether or not that player is ever going to be the player that you evaluated. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we felt like he would be. And quite honestly, he's better than what we thought.
Now, there are a number of players in this draft, Jeff, that were pretty much one-year starters and maybe didn't blossom fully the way that teams had hoped they would in the first, especially given that they were first-round selections. How much of that was a concern, given that Ryan had really only been in a P5 conference for 1 year.
No, we actually spent a lot of time with Ryan just watching his, gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Is it Stevens Point where he was at?
One of the Wisconsin schools.
Yeah, so they all run together almost. But, yeah, we watched some time. You know, like we gave him credit for the previous seasons. I mean, like he was a 3 or 4 year starter and, you know, albeit a 1 year starter at Wisconsin. I mean, he played a considerable amount of football. So we really kind of gave him credit for that. Now, Marshawn was different. You know, Marshawn really only played the one season there at Ohio State, and that was a little bit of a concern. And look, there's some old axioms that I learned over the years in the league. You know, a lot of them being from Parcells that say, be careful of the 1 year player, the 1 year starter, and those were all kind of echoing in the back of my mind as I'm taking Marshawn. But we felt like the talent was too good. We just saw a competitive player with Marshawn with tremendous ability. Good ball skills, good character. So we weren't as concerned, and I just felt like that was worth the risk.
I gotcha. All right, now you mentioned Marshawn, and that's a kind of perfect segue into the next question. Marshawn was kind of the perfect marriage of need and player. I mean, every scout I've spoken to in this series has talked about how Marshawn was one of the elite players in the draft and certainly their number one corner. Had he not been available at 11, and presuming Mahomes was not as well, do you recall who would have been in consideration at that part of the draft for y'all at 11?
Well, if I remember correctly, Neil, that we had two players that we were either going to sit and wait for, or two players that we were going to go up and get if one fell off the board. And that was Marshawn and Patrick, which I've talked about before. And both of them were there when we got to 9. And then I think Cincy took Ross. And so we really never were tempted to go up and get or move up in the draft because we kept having two players available to us. Mm-hmm. And so certainly, you know, we knew we were going to get one of the two, and then Kansas City went to 10 and took Mahomes. And by that time, you know, we couldn't do anything about it, but we were perfectly fine taking Marshawn. We had Marshawn really kind of at the top of the board. I don't really recall too many other players in that discussion because the whole time it was those two players and they were available to us until really the 10th pick. And then, you know, Kansas City did what they did. So, and it was kind of a no-brainer. We didn't even talk about it. We just took Marshawn. You know, just I don't think many people flinched, to be honest with you.
Well, it certainly has worked out well for the team. Do you recall kind of how you handicapped the other cornerbacks? As you recall, Humphrey was part of that draft. Jackson out of USC was part of that draft. Were they comparable players to Marshawn at all?
I'm sorry. Who was the other one you said, Latavius White?
Tre'Davious for sure. I was looking at Marlon Humphrey out of Alabama and Adoree Jackson out of USC.
Yeah, we liked all three of those players. As a matter of fact, I think we had all three of them in the first round. We loved Adoree, probably because of the versatility, but not much. You know, I think we had Murphy Humphrey next, and then White, and then Adoree. Knowing we had the 32nd pick, Adoree was probably someone that we were thinking that might be there at 32. We loved his return skills. We felt like between 11 and 32 that both Humphrey and White would probably be gone, but like both players.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If White had been available, he hung around there in the first round a little bit.
Yeah.
Would you consider taking a player like White, given that you had already kind of satisfied a need with Lattimore?
Well, I think, you know, if he's the highest player on the board, we would have to consider it. And again, it's at a core position and, mm-hmm. and I'll say it, 100 times, if I have to say it 1,000, I won't hesitate to build a strength at a core position. That's something I've learned a long time ago. And it was echoing in my head, this year's draft with, the Peyton Turner pick is, don't be afraid to build a strength. At a core position, the defensive end, corner, offensive tackle. I'm not afraid to do that. And when you have a strength, you can do a lot of things, and you can kind of maintain consistency at difficult positions.
Okay, I got you.
All right, so we've talked about Mahomes at length. After what was the team's take on Clemson's Deshaun Watson and North Carolina's Mitchell Trubisky? Would they have been in play at all? Were they guys that you considered in the first round? And again, we're not trying to pick on anyone. Obviously, Trubisky's had his struggles. We're not here to criticize. I'm just more interested in kind of where y'all saw those players.
Yeah, look, we saw them as both good players. I would say. I know specifically, you know, we liked both of them. We had them both in the first round. You know, I would rather not say who we liked more, but we saw them both as starters. I don't know that, again, the two players that we were specifically going for at the 11th pick, you know, we didn't really hesitate. You know, we never really talked about anybody else other than those two. At 11, we would have probably had to had maybe one or the other in a conversation if those two players were taken and we were not able to go up and get them. But we'd never really had that conversation. So look, we both felt like they were both capable starters. We loved the athlete and Watson. We loved his makeup. And very, very sad to see what's going on with him now. And Trubisky had the arm and the upside and, you know, again, the makeup as well. So we liked them both. I would be lying if I didn't say we liked them both.
Okay. All right. So Utah's Marcus Williams tends to get overlooked in this draft a little bit, I think, and yet he's been one of the keys of the Saints secondary almost since he's arrived. Was he a player the team targeted and hoped to select, or was he simply kind of the best player there at a need position? You know, again, kind of the marriage of need and best player there.
I don't recall him being a target. I do know one of the objectives in our draft, our pre-draft little session that Mickey and Sean and I had the morning of the draft was let's help our defense. And that was an objective. You know, and at that point, you know, Marcus was certainly someone that was high on our board. He, I think there may have been two players in that bubble. And again, that was probably Marcus and Alvin. So we just felt like helping our defense was one of the objectives that we went into with. And he checked a couple boxes, you know, from a need standpoint. He's a quarterback of the secondary. He's a ball hawking safety, very good range, high makeup, high intelligence. You know, so he fit, or checked a lot of boxes of what we were looking for to help that defense. And certainly after we picked Marcus, Kamara became one of the higher targeted players that we had moving forward.
Well, as a Houdat myself, I'm really glad you're able to land them both, Jeff. It makes me nervous to think that there's a possibility that you wouldn't. But we'll talk about Alvin a little bit more here in a second. All right, so 15 defensive ends were taken before Florida Atlantic's Trey Hendrickson in 2017. Pass rusher was definitely a team need for the Saints, yet you pass up several highly rated edge rushers, and your decision has been validated now, notwithstanding the fact that he's no longer a Saint. He got paid very well. How hard was it to be true to your board with so many players that apparently other teams really thought highly of at the position getting selected before he was?
Well, I think you just said it. The 2017 draft class was a classic example of why you follow your draft board. And we did have a need position at defensive end. And I remember spending a lot of time watching the defensive ends, analyzing, doing some really deep dives on some of those players. You know, we were coming off a 7-9 season and, you know, it's sometimes easier to draft when you're not very good versus drafting when you have a really good team, because so many of those times where need and best player are basically the same thing because you have so many needs. Mm-hmm. So you're going to feel a need regardless of the best player. So we just kind of followed our board. We weren't a very good team at the time. And so we had some needs and Trey was just sitting there in a very good position and it felt, you know, felt right. And he had a big upside. You know, we knew he would be kind of a developmental player. But he all the traits that we're looking for that position, he was prototype. He was highly competitive. He's productive. His motor never stopped. He was fast. And he was tough. So we just felt like it was a perfect fit for one of the better players that was still left on the board, and it filled the need. And Trey just kept getting better every season. And, geez, obviously he hit a home run with the 13 sacks or whatever it was this year. And I wish him well. He's I would consider him a friend and someone that I talk to as much as anybody in that class, and just a class individual.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about number 41 now. You mentioned, obviously, that he was in consideration when you took Marcus. After that, was there a bit of maybe a sense of urgency of, hey, we got to figure out what it takes to get up and get Kamara? Did you have a sense of where he might go and what teams were interested? Can you discuss kind of that whole process of selecting him a little bit?
Yeah, so, you know, we if I remember correctly, like it was, again, it was a two-person bubble. And look, I give Sean and really one of my area scouts at the time, Cody Rager, you know, Cody just nailed the makeup and the character of Alvin. And the more we spent time with him, we obviously went to Tennessee and worked him out. You know, I think I talked about that in your book forward, and mm-hmm. we just kind of fell in love with him. Certainly Sean did, and he had a clear vision for him. And so after we took Marcus, we were trying to, now there's a huge sense of urgency. Now we had 2 third-round picks in our back pocket, and really kind of felt like we wanted to use both of those because we just had some targeted players that we had wanted to kind of go after. So we were really trying to get another pick either in the bottom of the second or the top of the third. And we were calling everybody at the bottom of the second, everybody at the top of the third. And we were able to, you know, I think we traded with the San Francisco 49ers for the top of the third round pick. Wasn't the very top, but it was close to it. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of created a draft slot, you know, with the next year's two. And I think it was maybe a fifth or sixth. I can't remember what we gave him as well. But, yeah, there was a lot of urgency. Sean wanted that player. And, again, I'll give you another axiom. You know, it's real simple. Parcells said, do you like the player? And if the answer is yes, it's simple. Get the player. Mm-hmm. Do what it takes to get the player. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did, you know. So we got the player. And I don't think there was anything that was going to stop us from getting him. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one thing that's been a hallmark of your time with the Saints, Jeff, is that when you want someone, you do what it takes to get there. And I think that's pretty bold and shows a lot of courage in your board to do that when so many teams seem like their strategy is just to collect as many as they can and hope that a couple of the players work out.
It all comes down to vision, Neil. You know, when you have a clear vision and he fits the traits that you're looking for, and you can there's a batting average of players in our league that fit those traits. And when the batting average is a pretty damn good batting average, then you might as well go with what's been working. And so we're a team that likes makeup, smart, tough, competitive, prototype. And that's been working for us. So we try to stick to that formula.
Sure. Now, as you know, Alvin was far from the only talented running back to come out of that draft. Kareem Hunt, James Conner, Tariq Cohen, Jamal Williams, Marlon Mack, Aaron Jones, all running backs that came after Kamara. Did you ever consider taking another running back? And was there anyone else you really liked?
Look, those are all good backs, and they've proven that. And we had all of them on our board. We liked a couple of them, you know, for different roles. I don't think that there was too many of them that we felt like could be Alvin, but certainly there were some really good backs, just maybe a little different vision for the position, especially the vision that Sean had for Kamara. Mm-hmm. But I think we liked all those players in particularly. But Alvin was the sole player that we were going to give up a future second round plus to go up and get. Yeah. I mean, look, I know we spent a lot of time watching Tariq Cohen. We watched the backflips, the two catches in the backflips. That was pretty cool in the draft meetings. And spent a lot of time evaluating Kareem Hunt and Aaron Jones. And those are just to name a few. We spent a lot of time with those guys. But Alvin was the one that we were willing to give up some resources for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the guy that may be your starting quarterback this year was a guy that did not sign with the Saints, as obviously was not drafted by the Saints, did not sign as an undrafted free agent with the Saints, signed with the Packers. Was Taysom Hill a guy that you kind of pursued post-draft? I mean, was he a guy you might wanted to sign as an undrafted free agent? And was he on your radar? I mean, kind of what was your – or was he a guy that you really didn't even kind of have an interest in until he performed well during preseason games?
Well, he was a graded player that we had on our free agent board. I don't know that we aggressively pursued him post-draft. He came on my radar with his preseason performance. I remember Terry Fontenot, you look at these four or five quarterbacks in preseason. And at the time, I think we were looking for, kind of a young backup that can develop. And again, it kind of went back to those traits. You know, you saw a smart, thick guy that can run around and make some plays. And look, I'd be lying if I told you, if we saw the Taysom Hill today on that preseason tape, we did that. That's a whole nother story, but we did see some traits that we liked, him playing quarterback, and he threw the ball well. He got a quick release. He can get out of trouble. He had running skills. You saw his size on tape. You saw guys trying to, tackle him low, and he's pulling out of, pulling out of tackles, people sliding down the pole. So there was certainly the preseason tape that really got us interested. And once Sean, saw the tape and really the numbers that he showed, 6'2.5" and 230 and 4.44 and a good test score. And his winning record at BYU when he was playing was pretty darn good as well. And so all those things became – apparent. And then we were the only team that that claimed him, which
really,
yeah, that which I think is a whole nother deal.
Fascinating. Even after his success in the preseason, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, last question I got for you, buddy. I can't believe we're already at the end. But most of the picks in 2017 were from Power Five conferences. Was this a specific decision intended to kind of stop the string of 7-9 finishes, or was it strictly how the board fell?
Well, I would say, Neil, that, 85% to 90% of every year's draft is Power Five. Mm-hmm. And, so the analytics really just kind of – they kind of lead you in that direction anyway. What I felt like was important – when you're not very good is to make sure at the very least you're hitting a double, like you're not striking out on any pick. And it really, that's kind of been my philosophy for a long time. I've probably been, ridiculed for not going after the home run as much as I should. But I'd rather be a consistent on base percentage and hitting doubles and knowing exactly what I'm getting. I like high floor players. I know exactly what I'm getting. I'm going to cut down my margin for failure in regard to makeup and intelligence. And, I'm certainly not going to let certain things that I have control over be the cause or failure. And that's a little bit of my philosophy. That's how I've been taught. Look, Power Five players, I mean, they play the most competitive football there is in the world. Mm-hmm. And so why not choose those guys to come in here and have a clear vision for them to compete at a higher level? So that's really the analytics, really, more than anything else.
Now, it's been – I mean, you can look at the roster and tell that Ohio State seems to be a player that a school that the team seems to target. Is there something Ohio State does differently from other teams?
Oh, not necessarily. Look, Ohio State does a great job of developing their people. And they're coached tough. They're coached hard. They do a lot of things right. There's a communication level that, from their staff that you trust, and, you know, you got good resources there, good sources of information that give you a really good picture of the player, through high school, through their training habits, how they've developed there. And again, it goes down to having a real clear vision for the person. When you can paint with all kinds of colors, and it's not a black and white picture, and you're not having to guess and assume. Those are all dangerous words when you're drafting, assume and guess. Mm-hmm. I like to know exactly what I'm getting. And Ohio State's just been one of those schools that we felt comfortable with. Not that other teams don't do the exact same thing, because there's a lot of them out there. Mm-hmm. It's fell the right way for us. And we've had some good luck with those kind of guys. I certainly think Pete Werner is going to be another one of those guys for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff, I can't thank you enough for your time. I wish you success in keeping your staff together. I'm sure that becomes a greater challenge every year as the team continues to win. And I know that other teams have kind of sniffed around, and I'm sure they'll continue to do that. And I wish you continued success, again, very selfishly, because I'm a Who Dad, as you know. But also I appreciate everything. I appreciate your time and best of luck, buddy. Thanks so much again. And we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good, Neil. Thanks for having me, and a big fan of yours and a big fan of the Inside of the League, and continued success for you as well, pal.
All right. Thank you again. For everyone who's joined us, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with our final episode in this 10-week series on the 2017 NFL Draft. Have a great rest of the day.